everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the
Geek Buddies. Hey!
Well, we are here again this week to have some fun breaking down some great new geek news topics that have been blowing up over the last few days here. We're going to jump into those Super Bowl movie trailers, which a lot of you I know have been waiting to hear our thoughts on. So we're going to get into that. We've got a new Little Mermaid trailer that dropped as well. We're going to touch on a little Melissa McCarthy cackling as Ursula there as well. We're going to talk about some news from Kevin Feige in Phase 5, some updates on his end. We're going to get into that Joker 2 picture with Lady Gaga that was released as well. And we're going to dive into some breaking news that happened just before we started recording on How to Train Your Dragon, getting a live-action adaptation. So a lot going on. And in our, as I said, our main topic, though, is going to be jumping into those trailers and more. So, but let's introduce ourselves. I am the Outlaw John Rocha, writer, producer, and host here on The Geek Buddies.
I am Michael Vogel, a writer and producer of animated TV shows and movies. And I've had a lot of caffeine today.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
And this is Shannon McClung, and along with being an animation writer, a television actor, having a decent amount of caffeine, nowhere near that, but I also have exceptionally high hair right now. I need to get my hair cut, but yeah, this is a little high for me. Like, as I'm like, it looked fine in the mirror, but now that I'm looking at myself in the screen, yeah, a little self-conscious.
You look like Astro Boy.
You might have hit 5'2".
Oh, wow. Wow.
Zing.
Zingarama. I think you have a little Astro Boy going on, in my personal opinion, but I like Jimmy Neutron. All right. Well, anyway, we're going to get into so many things going on here. And a big shout out to Carbon Health, who continues to power and sponsor us here on the Geek Buddies. Head on over there for any of your healthcare questions, concerns, or needs. CarbonHealth.com, or download the app to have a doc in your pocket. As I've been mentioning,
Was that a short joke?
Was it? Oh, wow. Wow. And as I've been mentioning over the last couple of weeks,
someone's got a short fuse today.
Oh, dude. Oh, no. Is this going to be the whole... damn it. Anyway, they've been working a lot of mental health stuff and implementing new mental health programs. So if you've got that stuff going on here as we go into February, March, you know, spring's coming up. You know, maybe you want to get taken a look at here and see if there's some ways to deal with the world changing, deal with life changing. Head on over to carbonhealth.com and get that squared away for yourself today. For sure.
Yeah. Don't forget that Carbon Health will help you with the big things, but don't forget to not overlook the little things. It's the little things that really are important in life sometimes. It's those little small things that you might not think need to get checked out, but they really should get checked out, because little things can become big problems. So don't short yourself.
They can become big problems. Can become big problems.
Well, and speaking of big problems, let's get into our first topic here. Certainly a lot of people have
opinions. That's why he's the boss. That's why he's the boss, guys. He keeps us on track.
It would be a four-hour show if I didn't. So let's talk about it here. This dropped yesterday, causing a lot of uproar on the internet, both positive and negative. You know, James Gunn having a recent announcement that we all covered right after it dropped at 9 a.m. to talk about the new path of DC. And he spoke specifically about essentially having an Elseworlds type of DC existence, for where the Batman exists and also where the Joker exists, especially that sequel that's coming out. And they just released a new picture of Lady Gaga here in the Joker 2 film. And clearly, at least to me, this looks like Dr. Harleen Quinzel, a.k.a. Harley Quinn here, in the approach, in the demeanor, in the care, in the love, the hand on the cheeks. You see this, the look on her face, everything. This is a look I don't think I've ever seen on Lady Gaga's face, so I find this incredibly fascinating. Gentlemen, what are your thoughts here? Because the internet was divided between the people who love this and the people who were mad that we were going to get the Harley Quinn approach that people didn't like back in the 90s. Now, in retrospect, for being beholden to the Joker all the time, clearly from the body language, it seems like she's very much entranced by him and his comfortable, smooth, confident smile there. So what do you all think about this picture? And are we 100% getting Lady Gaga as Harley Quinn?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt that this is her sort of descent into madness, thanks to Arthur Fleck, aka the Joker. Yeah. Like I guess, you know, I was in a bit of an echo chamber because I only heard positive stuff. Like,
oh, okay.
Granted, it is a still. It is a very sure. close up still. One picture from a movie that is not going to come out for a minute.
But I will say it was a carefully selected still, Shannon. So they clearly wanted to get tongues wagging.
Sure. And like I'm struggling to find where someone would find any sort of negativity tied with this. I mean, again, maybe I'm in a little bit of an echo chamber with the people that I follow, but it was just sort of like, oh, yeah, that's a cool photo. Like there's definitely sort of a mania in her eyes. So yeah. I'm like, you know, Joker being what it was, like folks didn't have a whole lot, like they just didn't know what it was going to be. And the fact that it did turn out to be, you know, a good movie that was incredibly successful, yeah. Using that same creative team, adding an interesting wrinkle in the addition of Harley Quinn and adding the musical element, is like, is this going to be good? No idea. Is it going to be interesting and unique? 100%. Like this is a different type of comic book film. And personally, like I'm here for it. I mean, based off of that still, I'm like, yeah, it seems like the train's headed in the right direction. I'll be curious to hear from you guys the negativity, just because honestly, I've not heard anyone say anything negative about it.
Well, I mean, the shot, Michael, certainly Todd Phillips coming back to direct this, but also the shot implies the old story of, or the original story of how she became Harley Quinn. And they made her certainly Margot Robbie's approach to it has been much more empowered, especially Birds of Prey approach to it. The new Harley Quinn animated show is much more empowered, less about being a lovesick fool to Joker. Do you think they're tossing that away and going back to the original source and the origin story of her and making her beholden to the Joker? Because that's the criticism I saw from some female pundits and some other pundits who were saying, oh no, is this a repeat of the same origin story? We've moved on past that. What do you think of this picture? And what do you think about some of those reactions?
Well, it's funny. And again, I might be dating myself, and also I'm a dude. So let's take two of those things as what I'm about to say. And I could be completely, not as aware of certain things, or I feel it in a different way. But I think that part of what makes Harley Quinn amazing as a character is that she started in a place and evolved past it.
Mm-hmm.
So in either version, I mean, I know that they've tweaked the origin of, did Harley jump into the acid? Did Joker push her into the acid? Like, there's been lots of tweaks to the how of it all and the why of it all. But in any version of Harley Quinn, she started off in a shitty relationship with the Joker, and then she moved on past it. And, you know, if you're watching the Harley Quinn animated series, she's in a much more evolved and healthy relationship with her girl Poison Ivy, Harl Ivy forever. But I think that part of Harley getting to a place where she can be with Ivy and be this more evolved on her own, I want to say heroine, but anti-hero, is that she evolved past this super shitty relationship with this super abusive guy. And we've seen Margot Robbie, her take on it. We've seen that the DC version's take on it thus far. Whether we see a new DC version of Harley Quinn with what James Gunn is doing remains to be seen. But I think given the dark kind of grimy nature of the first Joker movie, kind of seeing that version of Harley's origin story to me is interesting, because I think that growing up, watching Batman the Animated Series, seeing this character of Harley go from a background character to a really great sidekick character to a great main character in her own right, that episode Mad Love, which was based on the Mad Love comic book, which really delves into that origin story of Harley and Quinzel becoming Harley Quinn, is still one of the best stories. And to watch a story as a kid on a animated TV series that really dealt with this person in this abusive relationship, she's a fascinating character. And so I think erasing that part of her origin, to me, I think there's still an interesting story there. And it's a story that a lot of people outside of the comic book world who don't see as many comic book movies, who may see a movie like the sequel to Joker, it might be a really interesting story for them too. So that is just, and like, that is my opinion based on one image. Now, the more that we see about this movie, I might have a wildly different opinion and say, whoa, Todd Phillips really missed the boat on this and he does not get who Harley Quinn is, or we didn't see this move on. But I think I'm kind of in the boat with Shannon that this is a big swing, and it could be a swing and a miss, and it could be a home run. And I don't know which one it's going to be, but I appreciate the fact that it's a big swing. If anyone in the comments, particularly like our female fans, people who feel really differently about Harley Quinn, like 100% tell me why I'm wrong. 100% let me know. I'll respond to you. Like, I definitely think it's an interesting conversation. And depending on your age, depending on when you became interested in Harley Quinn as a character, and depending on your gender, I think you can have a wildly different opinion on which version and which take of Harley Quinn you think is the appropriate version. So I think it's a really interesting topic that really is dependent on your personal relationship with this character.
Yeah, it's real fascinating. I mean, I love the picture. I think it's great. Or the shot, rather. It's great. And she looks so intensely connected to the Joker, and Joaquin Phoenix's casual, confident smile with the shades of the clown makeup on his face. All of it is there. So that could be a very fascinating exploration, because how many of us have been in shitty relationships, climbed out of them, and got into a healthy one because we learned what we needed to learn from that shitty relationship? And she could symbolize that, as you said, Michael, so well. She could be something that represents that for a lot of people who, as you said again, are not in the comic book world, aren't watching these films from comic book world. And also, I think we're such an interesting transition place now with our entertainment, where we have been swinging so progressive over the last few years. Now there's a bit of a pushback within the fandom, within people who are enjoying this kinds of things, to not be so sensitive or touchy about this kind of stuff. And even now we're seeing these battles on the internet and on websites about, should we have sex scenes? Should we not have sex scenes? And the puritanical people are siding with the people who don't want to have sex scenes. And some of the most progressive people are saying we shouldn't have sex scenes. And they're suddenly finding themselves as allies, these two opposite political spectrum people, allies against sex scenes. So it's just a fascinating transition place. And when Joker came out, Joker got a lot of shit for aggrandizing white male anger and, making it seem cool, making it seem interesting. Even though he's a villainous guy, a lot of people glommed onto this character, kind of like they did with Michael Corleone, the Godfather, in the 1970s. You know, they like this guy, even though he's a villain, even though he's doing bad things, even though he's killing his brother, they like this guy for the personality and the charm that Joaquin Phoenix brought to it. So maybe they're taking a rougher, honest approach, as opposed to playing to these things that they need to play to, or they're combining the two, where we see her in this terrible relationship, but she climbs out of it by the end of the movie, realizing the toxicity of it all and finding herself in a stronger place. And Arthur moves on in a different way as well. Because at the end of the movie, yes, he has that moment where they drag him out, but not without all these other things happening around it. So it'll be an interesting approach that they take. Certainly a much more adult approach, an R-rated approach. So they might not be afraid to have harder edges on this particular property and on this particular franchise.
But you bring up a really interesting point too, I think this is where context is going to be so key to this movie, which is this relationship is not going to be the same as the relationship that we know. Like, Arthur is not the same Joker as the Joker that we know. So like the entire Joker movie gives us an origin story for the Joker that is very different. And I don't want to say he's right in the movie by any stretch, but he's also not wrong. Like, society kind of like dogpiles on this guy who was already sort of on the edge to begin with. So this is not the guy that is so focused on blowing up Batman that he's ignoring the girlfriend in front of him, because there's no Batman for him to blow up in this movie, at least not that we know of yet. So what is this movie? Like, this is going to be a very different take on things. And so the relationship that this Harley and this Joker get into will probably not be I think it's a safe bet seeing the first movie that I'm not going to bank on it being a healthy relationship, but it's not going to be the same thing exactly of this supervillain who doesn't really give you the time of day except when he needs you to do something. So I'm just really curious to what this relationship is going to be. The musical aspect of it adds a whole other layer that you're like, what is really going on? Like, this might just be the courtship. And I think if the movie creates a version of Arthur that is wooing Harley and they kind of fall for each other and it's this weird fucked up love story and he's not even abusive to her yet, that might be something that's interesting too. I have no idea what it's going to be, but I think this, like, the jury's out. But I think the main thing to take away, at least at the moment, and I agree with you, is that's an awesome photo. Yeah. Like, that photo looks like it's right out of a Batman comic book in all the right ways as far as Harley and Joker go. So as far as, like, kicking things off, it's really interesting, and it's not nearly enough for us to form any opinion on what the ins and outs of this relationship are actually going to be yet.
Yeah, and Shannon, what we saw in the first movie, that whole relationship with Zazie Beetz is completely made up in his mind. So this might be a shot from something made up in his mind where she's, you know, lovelorn, and she's totally besought by him. And this is all in his head. All the musical stuff could all be in his head. And she's actually has no interest in him. And this is a whole thing he's fabricating in his mind. That's a possibility as well from this shot.
Oh, absolutely could be. I mean, that's what I was thinking as we were chatting, was that fabricated relationship with Zazie Beetz, in how Arthur Fleck really wants love.
Yeah.
You know, he wants some sort of connection, and he may have finally found it with this, you know, psychotherapist. So yeah, I mean, I do agree with Vogel that my guess is that this is going to be the courtship.
Yeah.
And that whole musical aspect, it is 100% in their heads, but I think it's two damaged people possibly finding each other. Like, that's kind of my guess.
Yeah, that happens in this world for sure. All right, well, let's take and that is, you know, we got a while before we see anything from Joker to the trailer or anything like that. So, but this is so far the two clips, the two shots we've gotten have very much stayed in the vein of what they did in the first movie. And so it's going to be curious to see, once we get a trailer, exactly what the story is going to be there. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll jump into some Kevin Feige news right after this.
Do, 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 do. Do, 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 do. Do, 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 do. Do, 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 do.
What's that one?
Send in the clowns.
Oh, good. Very good. Go ahead.
Hey, look, you can't make everybody happy.
They all can't be just The Last of Us. I get it. I get it.
Go ahead. Oh, The Last of Us, who the people in the comments, you, I got a bunch of rolled eyes from my co-host. The people in the comments really, really enjoyed that.
People loved it. You spoke to the people.
the ones that commented. Maybe everyone else thought it was stupid. But they didn't have the energy to say anything. So with Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania coming out this Friday, the Kevin Feige promotional machine has kicked into high gear, and he sat down with EW to talk a lot about Phase 5 and what is coming. And really interesting, because as we've talked about, you know, Phase 4 has been a little more bumpy.
Sure.
Than, say, Phase 3 was. But, yeah, he actually threw out some really, really interesting stuff. First, about talking about an adjustment to the slate of the Disney Plus shows, saying the pace at which we're putting out the Disney Plus shows will change so they can each get a chance to shine. And the follow-up question was, does that mean there's going to be fewer shows and or more spaced out? And he responded both, I think. He also jumped into talking about Daredevil Born Again, saying how it's going to be a little more episodic in nature. I mean, if you're watching Poker Face on Peacock, like, that's something that Rian Johnson deliberately set out to do, was like, what happened to those great old shows, those episodic shows where you could sit down and you might appreciate the larger story if you've been watching, but also you don't need to have all of the context to just sit down and enjoy something. And it seems like that is something they're trying to do with Daredevil Born Again, to have the thing that you can sit down and just watch. Hey, this is Daredevil's case of the week, as it were. And then he goes into talking about Harrison Ford as President Thaddeus Ross, and how the relationship that he's going to have with Anthony Mackie's Sam Wilson, that's going to be an interesting dynamic. He also said, which was a surprise to me, that Bucky Barnes is going to be the de facto leader of the Thunderbolts. I mean, yeah. I certainly thought it was going to be Yelena Belova. He also, as Ant-Man is coming out, he wants to talk about his new favorite guy, Jonathan Majors, saying Kang is the highest testing villain we've ever had in any of our friends and family screenings. And he also cites his work in The Last Black Man in San Francisco as a huge reason we cast him, which if you have not seen that movie, I believe it is on Amazon Prime. It was an Amazon film. And he is, Jonathan Majors is stupendous in that. He also says Spider-Man 4 is on the way, saying, all I'll say is that we have the story, we have big ideas for that, and our writers are just putting pen to paper now. He also said, talked about a potential return for Moon Knight, saying, I think there's a future for that character as we move forward. Also, with the Marvels, that Secret Invasion and the Marvels are essentially Captain Marvel follow-ups, but tonally, they couldn't be more different. And he closes with that Blade is going to start filming in the next 10 weeks or so, and that we should start to hear more about the Fantastic Four very, very soon. So a ton of stuff to throw at you, gentlemen. Let it process it. Who wants to go first? Who wants to speculate on something that we haven't talked about at all, which is Marvel's Phase 5?
Yeah. Well, I love that, you know, Shankman has made it very clear there's no casting going on just yet, but you know they're looking at people and probably talking to people. Deals are probably, you know, trying to be worked out or whatever. So it's all hush-hush. But I love the idea that they're going to start spacing this out. And I think this is a subtle response to the CGI situation, to the Marvel visual effects situation, by slowing down the production, by, you know, dragging out these times or causing more space in between these things. I think they realize they're going to give their people a little more time to catch up on these deadlines and get this stuff done. Because the uproar was getting louder and louder, not only for the quality of the CGI, but also this movement was picking up steam on social media and on these websites talking about how these visual effects artists were getting completely abused by Marvel. And the last thing you want is, you know, a negative connotation to the work you're putting out when you're trying to really keep it going into its 30th movies or whatever. So I understand. I think that was a smart move by them. I think pacing it out does make sense as well, because don't forget, we also got those Star Wars series that are coming out as well, like back to back and balancing all out. It's a lot for fans to consume nowadays. And I think he's realizing a little too much too soon with all of this stuff. Let's slow things down a little bit and have the confidence that the audience will be there. I like that. And I agree with you, man. The Bucky thing hit me out of left field. I was like, really? Bucky's going to lead this team? Interesting, because he's kind of a, how can I say this? He's a bit of a questionable leader, and he's still trying to figure out where he belongs. So if you're going to give the shield to Sam, I guess you've got to give Bucky something. And the Thunderbolts certainly make sense to carry on the legacy of Captain America, both through Sam and through Bucky, in a way. So I kind of like that. And the Ms. Marvel stuff, or the Marvel stuff, is really cool to read as well. So I'm looking forward to that. And the fact we're 10 weeks away from finally Blade getting to start shooting is exciting for me personally, as I want to see how this whole thing turns out. What stood out to you, Michael?
Ross is the president. That was the only the fact that General Ross was went from Secretary of State to President is really the only new news. I mean, I guess the spacing things out is news, but the rest of it is just good Kevin Feige hype. Like, this is, and like, it's good Kevin Feige hype. Don't get me wrong. True. He's good at what he does. But this was a really big article that was like, here's all the things that you know that I'm excited about. And by the way, General Ross is now president, and him and Sam Wilson are going to have some interesting. And I was like, oh, well, that, okay, new. Bucky being head of the Thunderbolts doesn't, I think that Yelena Belova is probably going to end up being the lead of that movie, but I think Bucky leading the Thunderbolts makes sense. He's the most experienced. He's the only one that, like, on that team that, like, hung with the Avengers. So, you know, we've talked about this with Quantumania. We talked about it with that being the first movie in Phase 5. We talked about this, like, the people that actually, if you were an Avenger in the Infinity Saga and you're still around, you saved the world.
Yeah.
And everyone else didn't save the world. So if you ran up on Thanos, you have a level of seniority that nobody else in the room has. So he's got that going on for him. The spacing it out, you might be right. Maybe I'm a bit more cynical. I don't think that they're that concerned about the special effects.
You're more cynical than me. When does that happen?
In that respect, I am. I mean, I think that they don't love bad press, but I also don't think that they were going to let that press
dictate
their release schedule. Okay. I do wonder, and again, this might be incorrect as well, but I wonder if part of this is the difference of Chapek and Iger.
I think that
particular, well, no, I mean, features and, I mean, I think Chapek's entire strategy was, we need people watching Disney Plus.
All right.
Let's roll out as much as fucking possible as quickly as we can. Star Wars and Marvel are our main things. Make as much as possible. Let's just flood the market. And I think Iger is a little bit more of a, let's eventize things and make them big deals. And so I wonder if that is also a part of it. In honest to God's truth, it's probably a little bit of all of it. And they probably are also seeing what we see and what we talk about and what everybody who's listening to us talks about is a little bit of that Marvel malaise. Like at a certain point, you know, I mean, and I mean, I'm feeling it. I'm going to see Quantumania tomorrow. And I'm excited to see it. And I'm excited to see if I agree with John or agree with other people on Twitter and see how I feel about it. But I don't have that like Marvel excitement. I'm like, all right, Quantumania is tomorrow and Secret Invasion is soon. And I got Guardians in a couple months. And it's like, it doesn't have that like holy shit feeling because there's so much. And I think they're trying to get us back to that holy shit feeling. I mean, I think they like I think the main thing with this article. I have another thought, but I've been talking a lot. But like, go ahead.
Go ahead, please.
I think the main thing with this article is that the vibe that I get from this article is the same vibe that I got when we went to Comic-Con, which is whatever their opinions are about their own movies, we will not know. Kevin Feige's not gonna go on EW and say, guys, we shouldn't have let Sam Raimi do what he did. Like, we really, like, whiffed the ball on that. And maybe the tone with Taika's movie was a bit off. And, yeah, you know what? I don't think that Moon Knight, like, landed on all four cylinders. Like, they're never going to say that. But they do have those opinions. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so, and I think that... I think they are.
I've never heard of anything landing on all four cylinders.
You know what? I knew when I said it was wrong. I should have tried to make a football analogy, but that would have been bad too.
Oh, yeah.
Even the tall guys make mistakes, folks.
You know. Let me put it this way. He could have come out and said, you know, with Moon Knight, you don't slay the runway every week. Sometimes your looks just don't work, and you're not on theme. Boy. Like it just doesn't. You don't always slay the runway. But I think that they are aware of the fact that even after Comic-Con, when they kind of gave us the whole it's the multiverse saga, we've got the Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars coming, and we're like, okay, cool, we still got to the end of Phase 4 and we're like, okay, there's a lot going on, man. I don't know. Yeah. Phase 5 still doesn't have that drive. It feels like if you are a comic book fan from back in the day and you read comics, where you would get like that comic book run where somebody would come on, whether it was, you know, Frank Miller Daredevil or Brian Michael Bendis Daredevil, and you would be reading it, and every month you were like, this is fucking great. Oh my God, I am so in. This is the best thing I'm reading right now. It's so good. And then a new creative team comes on and you're just like, okay, I'm going to stick with it for a while because I love these characters, but I hope it gets back on track. And then sometimes a new creative team comes back and you're like back on track. And it kind of feels like we're in a little bit of that comic book slump right now with the MCU. And I think he's doing everything he can to hype us up.
Yeah, especially when you look at that Rotten Tomatoes score right now, even though I was on the other side of it, you look at that Rotten Tomatoes score, that doesn't bode well for your movie, even though right now the box office I think is looking at 268 million, something like that. So really the biggest opening for the Ant-Man franchise because of Kang, and people want to see what we got here into open Phase 5. But that Rotten Tomatoes score can't put him with confidence, so I'm sure he's trying to get ahead of it by speaking about all the things that are coming and talking about all the things that he's really super excited to see for the Marvel Universe. So, you know, whatever the reaction is going to be in the long run to Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, which I loved, and if I had more energy I'd be going back to see again tonight. You know, he has to brand safe, so it makes sense the stuff he was saying. Shannon, did anything stand out to you? I know Mike and I have been talking for a bit. Is there anything you want to chime in with on this?
Well, I mean, I do like that he is saying, like, we're going to start hearing more about the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Because coming out of Comic-Con last year, a lot of folks were saying a lot of different things that when they for their Hall H presentation, they're bringing out
that never happens.
So I think the biggest disappointment for me personally was we didn't get to find out who our Fantastic Four is going to be. I think some people were kind of, you know, spitting nails about it. I was like, that sucks. That's what I was really hoping to hear about. But knowing the names that are being tossed about for certain characters, that's the thing that I really want to know. Also, the President mm-hmm. Ross edition was pretty fun as well. And also, like, because I've just been watching Shrinking and 1923 because Harrison Ford is all over the small screen right now. I love Harrison Ford. I hope, oh my gosh, I hope he sticks around because he's just, you know, well, he's 80. he's an older man. He still turns in a great performance. I have no doubt he'll be great. I just hope he sticks around because knowing that, well, no, I'm not saying he's going to pass away, but I'm just saying he's 80 and he's also, you know, he is not hurting for work or money. And Harrison Ford is not the type of guy to me that would sign a long-term contract. So it's like, I'm really curious what they're going to do with him. Is Red Hulk going to show up in Cap 4? Are they going to save him for the Thunderbolts? I mean, they haven't even officially said he's in the Thunderbolts. I mean, they've only said he's in Captain America 4.
I thought they did.
Snyder broke it on the hot mic that he is going to be in Thunderbolts. Yeah, that was the
story. But has the studio said it? Is like, I'm not doubting Jeff, but I'm just saying.
I was going to say, I'm just going to put that out there.
He's in it.
There's no way he's not it.
But just knowing his age, that is something that as a fan of the MCU and of Harrison Ford, that's one of the things that makes me nervous. It's like,
I know we got to jump, but I think you make an excellent point, Shannon, in the long run here, because it's kind of ironic that all of a sudden he's got this desire to work all the time at 80 years old. Like, where was this desire? And maybe there wasn't the properties of the franchises he was excited to be a part of in his 60s or 70s.
He was high. He was high.
He was with Callista smoking a bottle.
Him and Callista were high off their asses.
I would love to see Harrison Ford rewatching Empire Strikes Back or Indiana Jones high. I would love to see a video. That YouTube video would have 7 billion views. I'm telling you that right now. 7 billion views. You could charge $10.
If Harrison Ford did a high Harrison Twitch stream every night where it was just him watching his own movies high off his ass, like the entire world would watch it.
It's tough. We would achieve, I think we could achieve world peace if we could do that.
I know we're moving on, but I did want to say one more thing about it. I'm going to make another analogy.
I'm going to make
another analogy, but I think I've got this one right. The one thing he said that is very true about Marvel, despite how we feel about Phase 4, despite how we feel about Quantumania, despite how we feel about any of this really, is Marvel right now is playing poker. And it doesn't matter what their hand is, because they've got two aces up their sleeve. Did I do that right? I think I said it right. They've got, like he said, it's X-Men and Fantastic Four.
Yeah, right.
Like no matter what they do, even with Fantastic Four, because that's part of Phase 5, like if they get Fantastic Four right, and more importantly, if they can land X-Men, even if everything in the multiverse saga sucks, which I don't think is going to happen, but even if... everyone is showing up to see Marvel's X-Men. So like Marvel has like these two things that they're just like, we're good. Like we're good for the next decade, because as long as we get a good Wolverine and give you a Phoenix saga like you've never seen before, we're in.
Yeah. Third time's a charm.
Third time's a charm.
For the Phoenix and the Fantastic Four, it's third time's a charm, guys.
That's true.
Third time's a charm.
I just want to see James Gunn.
Hey, they did it with Spidey.
That's true. That's true. I just want to see James Gunn like John Malkovich in Rounders when he sees the success of Motherfucker! I just want to see that from James Gunn, because there's a lot of rumors that there's some tension between those two gentlemen. So we'll see how much truth there is to that. All right, Shannon, is that it from the Marvel and Kevin Feige stuff? All right, let's take a quick break and we'll jump into our third news item right after this.
Such a good score.
That is a good score. Michael Vogel, take it away, please.
Yeah, so we got some news that broke right before we started recording this week's episode, and that is that Universal is not out of the Burke business as far as How to Train Your Dragon goes. They are now – Burke is where Hiccup and the Vikings live, in case you didn't know. That was a deeper cut. This deeper cut than I intended with trying to do the alliteration, and then I realized that half of you were like, the fuck did he just say?
Not sure if serious. Yeah, go ahead, guys.
So Universal is several steps into development, according to The Hollywood Reporter, on a live-action version of the How to Train Your Dragon franchise. So as all of you know, How to Train Your Dragon, one of the crown jewels of the DreamWorks animation catalog. There is a trilogy. There's the first movie, second movie, third movie. All of them did really well. How to Train Your Dragon 1 received an Oscar for Best Animated Film, and How to Train Your Dragon 2 and 3 were nominated. No? It didn't?
No, it was nominated the same year as Toy Story 3. Toy Story 3 won.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah, no. That did not work out. Hold on, I thought Hollywood Reporter said it did, and I think you are right. So, award nomination for Best Animated Film and Best Score. So, yeah, did not best win. Score. But, obviously, beloved films, and now we're going to get to see Toothless and Hiccup and the whole crew in live action. I believe it is for March 20. They've already put the window in for when it is going to be released.
Crazy.
March, already. Yeah, of 2020. No, I don't know. March 14th, 2025. There you go. Hey guys, it just broke. I didn't have time to make notes. So March 2025, the movie is coming out currently. So look, we're going to talk about the Little Mermaid live action trailer in a minute with all the other trailers that we're going to talk about as our main topic. We've had a lot of Disney live action remakes of animated classics. Now DreamWorks and Universal are jumping into the same business. Yeah. Excited? Not excited? Good idea? Bad idea? What do you think?
Go ahead, Chip.
I am so torn on this one because that first How to Train Your Dragon movie is so incredible. It is so good. The relationship between Hiccup and Toothless is just one of the best things that I've seen on the big screen. And I also remember that was the 3D that they did for that movie post Avatar. I mean, that was magical. And when you look at it visually, it's like, yeah, this makes perfect sense. This would be a perfect live action adaptation. Now, it depends on what they do. I mean, the fact that they do have the director from the original three films, that he's going to be directing it, I feel like that's a good thing. But at the same time, it's like, are you going to Lion King it? Are you going to do just kind of a shot for shot live action remake of an animated film? Or are you going to try to put your own spin on it? And even with the putting, like, I don't think they should do the shot-for-shot remake. I do think they should put their own spin on it. Mm-hmm. But even within that, I'm so torn. Because that first movie, to me, is just so perfect. That it's like, the home run for me that you have to hit for this movie to work, it's just, I mean, it's a Boston Red Sox Green Monster home run. Like, that's a big wall in the baseball stadium in Boston called the Green Monster. Very hard to hit over. But it is so, it's just so hard to nail this. But at the same time, I also really, really want to see it. And also John Powell's score.
Yeah, oh my God.
Is one of the most, it's just one of the best animated scores, one of the best scores out there. And it's like, are you gonna use it? I feel like you should, but also that's why, just from top to bottom, I am so conflicted on this as a project. Like, I want it to be good, but I see all the ways that it could possibly go wrong.
Yeah, I would say it's one of these franchises that I thoroughly love. I'm never not enjoying it. You know, they're not all equal, but I enjoy the world. I think it's a damn good trilogy, to be honest with you, all in all. And yeah, John Powell's music is iconic. You guys know I'm no score whore, but when it stands out, it stands out. And when it does, I know I've listened to something really special. And I think that's been my feeling about John Powell's score. I'm with you. Dean Du Bois coming back to do it is interesting, because I like we're seeing with Last of Us, Neil Druckmann coming on as a co-creator with Craig Mazin. Mazin has a lot of experience doing live action TV series. So you bring Neil Druckmann in to be, let's work together. Let's, you know the spirit of the game. This is what I want to do with it. Let's work together so we can make it work for this medium. Dean Du Bois being on his own to do this and doing the adaptation of it, I think is going to be interesting. What is the special effects going to be like? What's the budget for the special effects on this? Because you got to make that dragon so incredible. Because that is one of the biggest selling points of Toothless. Can you get that right in a live action situation? I don't think I've seen many films or shows where you really get the dragon's personality coming through in a way that you are empathetic and connected. The remake of the live action of Pete's Dragon that is criminally underwatched, that was a great version of doing that. You actually connected with that dragon. You felt it. You sensed it. In my opinion, it was. But you don't sense that with the Game of Thrones dragons or the House of the Dragon dragons. Yes, they have a personality. Yes, they're strong. But you're not having conversations with this dragon, or having connective tissue with the dragon, feeling that sympathy and vulnerability to the dragon. That's going to be a lot of work there. And who is going to come in and play Hiccup? And Gerard Butler's still around. So if you get him to reprise the role, that'd be great live action. But who are you going to get in that's really going to capture that Jay Baruchel thing?
Just call the movie Dragon.
Yeah, that's it. Dragon's right. Dragon. Car. Plane.
Fight.
and by the way, there is a sequel coming called, what was it called? Car?
Ship or Boat?
Ship. Yeah, that's Ship with Mike Colter. So, whatever. Make the money. But, this situation, I'm excited to see if they can do it. I just have concerns about the people involved in it and their experiencing adapting it to live action. So that's my thought. Mike?
Yeah, look, I think, Disney has been spotty at best. I think, it's weird because I think with Disney, my feeling with their live action remakes is the more different the live action remake is, the better it has turned out for them. And when they stay as close as possible to the animated content, it's kind of like, ugh, it didn't work. But then we've been reviewing Last of Us every week. And I think Last of Us has really landed on the right way to do this, because you watch Last of Us, and if you played the game, some of the scenes in Last of Us are almost word for word taken directly from the game and just put on screen. But what is tying those things together are stories, characters, scenes, ideas that never existed in the game. And I think that's what's interesting. When I look at, I might not have begrudged Lion King live action its shot-for-shot moments if they had given me more Scar-Mufasa relationship, had really delved into Simba and Nala more because you had more time. There's a way to do this, I think, and I think Universal and the entire creative team on How to Train Your Dragon should really take a page out of The Last of Us book, which is, give us the key moments we love. We're all going to see it, to Shannon's point, because How to Train Your Dragon is one of the more perfect screenplays that's out there in the world of animated feature films. So give us the moments that we know we love. Give us the things that we want to see. Give us Hiccup and Toothless flying through the sky, him figuring it out, clicking that wing into that tail into place, and them just soaring. Give us the moments, but then expand the relationship with him and his dad. Expand the backstory. We know what happened to Hiccup's mom now because we've seen the second movie. So seed some of that into the story. Give us Hiccup's mom earlier. There's things you could do where you could alter things, change things, tweak things, turn things around that would give us the same story, but a deeper understanding. And I think the overall key with that is, if you're going to adapt anything, whether you are Julie Taymor doing Lion King on Broadway, whether you're taking our favorite Broadway, whether you're taking Wicked and doing it on the big screen, nobody actually wants to see the exact same thing we already loved over again. Right. We want to see something that feels like the right thing, that hits the right beats, but gives us something new. And that could be a new character, a new take, a new perspective, a new idea. So the real question with How to Train Your Dragon is, how do you give us what we want and also give us something new to this story, some new shade to it that we didn't think about or realize before?
Yeah. Yeah. And as you said, we're seeing that in Last of Us, you know, some fleshing out of these characters, fleshing out of these stories and having some fun with them. So we shall see. All right. Anything more on that, Mike?
That's all I got.
Okay. All right. Let's take a quick break. And then we're going to jump into these, get into these Mondo trailer discussion here right after this.
Do, 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 do. How to Train Your Dragon.
Oh, yeah.
How to Train Your Dragon, that iconic score.
I couldn't catch it.
That iconic score that you're not a score whore, but you know that when it stands out, you hear it.
Well, I like the original better. That's what I'll say. Anyway, all right, let's move on to these trailers here. We've got the Flash trailer that dropped on Super Bowl Sunday, which really exploded the internet. Then we had the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 trailer that dropped later on that day. Then we had an Indiana Jones 30-second spot that showed us some de-aging of Indiana Jones and Phoebe Waller-Bridge flying out of a plane or possibly falling out of a plane. And we got the Little Mermaid trailer that dropped here just a couple of seconds or a few minutes ago before we started. So, Shannon McClung, take it away. Where shall we go?
I think, you know what, let's start with the most recent. Let's start with the Little Mermaid. Okay. I mean, we were just talking about the live-action adaptation of How to Train Your Dragon. And we got to see some more footage from the live action adaptation of The Little Mermaid. And that's including the first look at Melissa McCarthy's Ursula. So I'll say, you know, I'll just go ahead and get my stuff out of the way because I know Mikey will have more to say about this. but as Vogel basically said, the live action adaptations of Disney animation, kind of a mixed bag. I mean, for me personally, I have no emotional investment in any of them. The only one that I've really, really enjoyed is Cruella. And that is, you know, more of a prequel to what we saw with 101 Dalmatians. But judging this trailer, I don't see, you know, it seems bright. It seems vibrant. Hayley Bailey, I think she has a beautiful voice. And that very quick shot that we got of Melissa McCarthy, I mean, I think she looks great. But I hear online there's a little bit of a mixed reaction to it. Again, I would not be the authority on this. So I'll throw it over to you gentlemen first. What did we think of this look at The Little Mermaid?
Mikey, you must go first here. Go ahead.
It's everything I just said. Like, I think Disney has a problem when it comes to their most beloved franchises, which is... It's exactly what I was just saying about How to Train Your Dragon. Like, we're all going to Little Mermaid because we want to see Little Mermaid. We want Ariel. We want Sebastian singing Under the Sea and Kiss the Girl. We want Ursula. We want Eric. We want all the things. But if they give us just that, and, you know, despite the different casting, despite some of the stuff that they've done, which I think is really good, if they just give us that, it'll be like, okay. Like, the animated movie will be better because it's the original. So what are they going to do that's different? And I think that when it comes particularly to, like, if you grew up in the late 80s, early 90s, it's like the holy four. It's like Little Mermaid, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, and Lion King are just like, you can't really touch them. Like, they are kind of just like these classics. And so how far they're going to push it, like, are Lin-Manuel Miranda's new songs that he's adding going to really, like, be on the same level as the Ashman and Menken songs? Like, there's just so many questions. So this trailer, it was good. As one of my friends said, the first 30 seconds was what we'd already seen in the teaser. And the second 30 seconds was like, okay, there's some mermaids and then you got Ursula. And, like, it was like, I'm intrigued. But given the track record that Disney has had with the live action movies, I'm also very sort of reticent. Because I'm just like, all right, like, is this going to do it? Like, did Beauty and the Beast do it? Did Aladdin do it? Did Lion King do it? is Little Mermaid gonna like blow it up? Like, and I like, I think that all three of those are varying degrees of success. I think Aladdin, oddly, is the most successful out of those three.
Yeah.
I think Beauty and the Beast is fine. It's kind of a it makes me just wish I was just watching the animated movie. And then the live action Lion King, I just literally, why does it exist when I can just watch, it's literally a shot for shot remake. Why does it exist? So, I don't know, guys.
Yeah. One of the most fascinating theater going experiences of my life was Michael calling every frame before it started to happen in Lion King for the last hour of that film. It was hilarious. Oh, and here come the bugs. Wow, shit, there are the bugs. I'm looking at this. It's an interesting shot. They don't give away too much, right? You hear her cackling. It is Melissa McCarthy. So Ben Falcone can't be too far behind, as we saw in her, even in her Super Bowl commercial, which drives me insane.
He's going to play Flotsam and Jetsam.
He's absolutely going to be in the movie. There's no way he isn't in the movie. And then this shot here, I mean, it's iconic. I like this look here. This kind of gives me hope. Eric is a little bit older than I anticipated. So I'm curious by that, at least by looks here. So very, very interesting. A different approach. So I'll say this. I hope they get it right. I'm starting to feel little weird feelings, kind of like Michael does. The more I see of this, the less I'm excited by it, even though I want to support it and I want Haley Bailey to do great in the role. And I like the gutsy cat recasting to go with a woman of color. But I don't know if it's 100% going to get there. And I think Michael hits it on the head. Like, there have been a number of not quite 100% hitting the target live action adaptations of these things. So you hope this one, because it is such a beloved film. I mean, even broke through my girlfriend's usual like a wall of pop culture stuff. When I mentioned there's a new Little Mermaid trailer, she had me put it on. She wanted to watch it. So for her, it's as you said, Mike, there are certain people of a certain age. It's an iconic film for whatever reason, for many reasons, rather, not whatever, but for many reasons. And so they got to get this one right, just like they had to get it right way back when to kind of launch this whole golden era at that time. So, we'll see. I'm not feeling too confident, but we'll see, is what I would say.
Fair enough. It will be here before you know it. It comes out May 26th, so just a little over 3 months. So, yeah.
How have we not gotten a massive trailer? I don't understand.
Marketing, I feel like post-COVID, marketing's a little different. I mean, there were the times that, you know, we would get a teaser a year out, and I think like those times are gone. But yeah, 2.5 months, summer movies start, and we'll get this one in a little over three.
I got Top Gun Maverick trailers for 4 years before I saw the movie, so I don't know. Maybe.
But that was pre-COVID.
We sure did.
Tom Cruise was 30 years old when he shot that. So the Little Mermaid will be out soon. Our next trailer, one that's near and dear to my heart, we got our 30-second spot at Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Again, I'll just go ahead and get my thoughts out of the way here. The only ding that I have on this trailer, or on this Super Bowl spot, rather, was the fact that we didn't get a 2-minute trailer that followed it like we did with Guardians and the Flash.
Yeah.
I was searching all over. I'm like, well, it's got to be up. They wouldn't just do 30 seconds and not do a new trailer. That is what they did. We get some more looks at the de-aged Harrison Ford, which just looks incredible. We get our first glimpse at, or rather an extended glimpse at Mads Mikkelsen's Jürgen Völler, our baddie. And then we get a great little exchange between Harrison Ford and Phoebe Waller-Bridge when they're on some crazy, crazy bomber. And it looks like they do a little bit of skydiving out of it. I thought this trailer, I thought this 30 seconds was great. Love to see Sala say, give him hell, Indiana Jones. Like, that was this just warmed my heart all over the place. I'm going in very cautiously optimistic, but that cautious, it is starting to wear away. I really hope that James Mangold doesn't let me down here. But gentlemen, what did you all think of our big game spot for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny?
I mean, I think a lot of people are starting to worry about this movie, which I did not anticipate. There's a lot of chatter on social media about this film, maybe not coming up to snuff. But, I mean, it's Mangold. He did such a good job with Logan. He's possibly about to do a Swamp Thing, which would be fantastic to see. So you hope he keeps this streak going with a nice or a good movie here. I like what we got, but I'm with you, Shannon. I was a little upset that we didn't get a 2-minute trailer. How, I mean, like what? You don't have the money for a 2-minute Super Bowl trailer? I know you do. So what's the issue here? Because even the Little Mermaid trailer, there was a lot of rumors that that was going to come out on Super Bowl Sunday. Then they didn't do it on Super Bowl Sunday, and they dropped it yesterday. And it was the same 30-second trailer they could have shown on Super Bowl Sunday. So where's why is Disney all of a sudden cutting costs in certain areas that they don't normally cut costs in? That's a little strange to me to see. I mean, it ain't like the mouse ain't got the money. So this is maybe they're just waiting for a bigger presentation down the road, or they didn't want to be cluttered with all the other trailers. That being said, I liked what we saw with him and Phoebe Waller-Bridge on that plane. I liked the energy of Mads Mikkelsen there. So, yeah, I mean, and Sala, of course, it's always great to see Sala. So it was enough to be like, okay, cool. Where's the next trailer? That's basically how I felt after I watched it. Mike?
I mean, I thought it was great. I it warmed my heart. It made me happy. I've been excited for this movie. I'm still excited for this movie. What I'm noticing in people's reactions is that Indiana Jones is different than the Marvel movies, the Star Wars movies, the DC movies, anything. All of these movies are either, in the case of Star Wars or things like that, where you are expanding the universe with a new cast of characters for a young audience. So the older audience has the nostalgia of what they grew up on, and the younger audience is excited about the new stuff. Or with the DC Marvel, you're just constantly recreating and reinventing these characters. So the older audience has the nostalgia and the younger audience is discovering them for the first time. Indiana Jones is just for the older audience. I don't think younger audiences are as excited. Like, you talk to younger audiences about Raiders and Temple of Doom and Last Crusade, and that's like our parents talking to us about old black and white movies. Like, it's like they're older movies. So I just don't think that... it'll be interesting to see. Now, this movie could get people excited again, but I think that in the case of Indiana Jones, unless Disney comes up with some really crazy, brilliant way to extend the Indiana Jones universe or to recreate it or to reboot it in a way that doesn't like make us all super, super angry, I think this movie is kind of a send-off for Indy. And in that respect, James Mangold is the guy to do it, and I hope they stick the landing.
Well, we got to keep a watch on Shannon if Indy bites it in this one. We got to keep a watch on Shannon. We got to strap him down. We got to strap him down. He'll kill Mangold in his sleep. Yeah. I think you're right. You know, but I think because we've seen the narrative turn on Indiana in some circles, some of the younger fan circles. You know, it's a white dude taking stuff out of other people's cultures type thing. I don't know how much of that resonates and really carries over and has a large effect on it all, but it may just be that it's been so long since that was 1989, that third one, that, you know, it hasn't necessarily been passed on at the same levels.
I mean, there was a fourth one. We just don't talk about it.
Oh, well, I don't really count that one. So yeah, I just don't really think about that one, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. But Shannon, do you think it's like when your parents were talking about Marlon Brando or something? What do you think?
You know what? Maybe I don't speak to as many younger people as I feel like I do. You know, it's not a brand that is dominating the conversation. I mean, I think that is kind of reserved for Star Wars, for Marvel, for DC, with some circles, Fast and the Furious, which is bananas to me. I think recasting Indiana Jones at the end of this is probably not the way to go. I mean, you know, with the resurgence of Kiwi Kwan, like some sort of short round project, that would be that's how I would like to see it be carried on. All the talk years ago of like who's going to be the new Indiana Jones is going to be Bradley Cooper, is going to be Chris Pratt. I hope it's none of them. I mean, I hope that when this is done, that fedora is hung up and the fedora and the bullwhip are hung up. And we just kind of let this franchise, at least as far as Indiana, the character of Indiana Jones is concerned, I'm hoping that they just let it rest.
Yeah.
And in 20 years, if there's some big resurgence for some reason, that they give it a swing then. But I think as long as Harrison Ford is alive, there's not going to be any other Indiana Jones, in my opinion. Well, and Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny comes out on June 30th. Our next trailer is our second look at Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. This was a very different trailer from that first trailer, and I think they did it correctly. I mean, that first trailer was great, but it was all about, we are going to rip your heart out and smash it into a million pieces. We see sad little Rocket. Like, it just looks so sad. I mean, we definitely had some fun moments, but it just seemed so, so sad. Whereas this one, we get a little bit more of the fun that Guardians is known for. A little bit more of the fun, a little bit more of the comedy. Really great kind of, you know, a three-way bit between Chris Pratt, between Star-Lord, Nebula, and Gamora. We're getting a little bit more of the High Evolutionary. Some more looks at Adam Warlock, and we get to see sort of the damage that Adam Warlock may be able to dish out when we see him and Drax sort of looks like they're in some sort of broadsword fight. I like the way this looks. I mean, I think the way that they chose to go with letting us have that sad teaser, but then also reminding us that this is a balls to the wall action comedy film, and we're going to have a good time. But gentlemen, I'll throw it to you. What did you think of our second look at Guardians Volume 3?
I mean, they're all going to die. I don't know. That's what it feels like to me, Mike. I don't know about you, but like, it just feels like, even from this trailer, yeah, we got some more action, we got some more of the stuff, but it still ended with that Chris Pratt scream. It still ended with Drax, which broke me, by the way. Drax saying, you know, it's been an honor to fight alongside you guys. That really got me. The Rocket stuff. I know I keep saying that, the Beatles stuff gets in my head, but the Rocket stuff that we got last time fed into this. I mean, seeing him with a companion and hugging and releasing her, I don't know her name, but like his friend there, it's great to see. And the Adam Warlock stuff was nice to see, but it just feels like we're going to be counting down who's going to die in this film, and that scares the shit out of me for a film like this, because, you know, whatever you feel about the second one, the first one was so good, and people love these characters. But I will say that end point was great. The Nebula stuff with him was fucking fantastic, you know? And she's like, knock it off! Like, it's so good. And then he makes the crack about the eyes, which I think is funny. So you're going to get the humor, but it really feels like this one is front-loaded with emotion. What do you think, Mike, of this trailer?
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, you know, like, a lot of the Gamora stuff was left out of the first trailer. So this trailer, like, featured really heavily on the Gamora relationship and kind of giving you a Cliff's Notes version. As Nebula says, a couple things were left out, but that's pretty much it. But we know that, like, a big piece of this movie is we've got the High Evolutionary, which is tied directly into Rocket's origin and all of that stuff. But we're also going to be picking up the threads from Endgame and seeing what happens with, like, Peter Quill and this new Gamora that is not his Gamora. And I think that relationship, and then the way that they're sort of twisting him and Nebula, like, he and Nebula have now been a lot closer and spent a lot more time together than him and this Gamora. So, and I think we do know from the last trailer or from some point, that Gamora is kind of running the Ravagers now. Or maybe we got that from the Comic-Con, or we've seen it like somewhere.
I think that was Comic-Con.
You know, yeah. So the Gamora is sort of, you know, like, running the Ravagers, and so that's how she does. So, like, the interesting thing about this trailer is you have all these threads. Like, when we saw that first teaser, and it opened with them landing on that planet that looked like Earth, but then everybody was an animal, and they all started, like, pelting the Guardians with all the balls, I thought that was just going to be, like, a way they started the movie or a way to, like, kick things off. But what it seems like from the trailer, because we kind of see Adam Warlock fighting on what looks like that planet, and we see a little bit more of it, and I think, like, is that the High Evolutionary's planet? Is that where he's built all these people that are like Rocket, that are these animal people? So it seems like that's going to be maybe the big third act set piece, where the Gamora Peter story and the Rocket High Evolutionary story and the Adam Warlock story all sort of collide together. So there's a lot of threads going on here, but I got a lot of confidence in this movie. I got a lot of confidence in James Gunn. I don't think that Guardians Volume 2 is a perfect movie. It's a little bit of a all over the place movie, but when that movie hits you in the emotions, it hits you hard.
Oh, yeah.
In the emotions, and it gets me every time. So I've come to really love Guardians Volume 2. I think Guardians 1 is a stronger film and a better structured film, but Guardians Volume 2 has a lot of heart to it. And so I kind of think, for this being James Gunn's big send-off for the Guardians story he wanted to tell, as well as his send-off in the Marvel Universe, I got high hopes for it.
Well, Guardians Volume 3 comes out May 5th, 2023. And that brings us to our last trailer, which is a big old look at The Flash. This one kind of knocked my socks off. I mean, we've seen little glimpses here and there, especially when DC had that this year, you know, this year in 2022, here are all the movies you're going to see. And we only got like two of them. but this trailer, I mean, this really gives, it seems like it gives the audience a lot of confidence and how much it leans into the DC universe that precedes it. I mean, a lot of Man of Steel, like we got to see Michael Shannon Zod. We get to see two Barry Allens, two Bruce Waynes. I mean, the moment that we hear the opening notes of that Tim Burton the Danny Elfman Batman theme, and we get to see Michael Keaton. I mean, it just looks huge and great and awesome. I had one little quibble, and it was a performance thing that it feels like Barry Allen number two. I'm like, Barry Allen number two might be an idiot. And not like a fun comical idiot, but just the way like he takes Sasha Kaye's picture, Supergirl's picture in the Batwing. Like, oh, we want to show this to our kids. I'm like, I don't know about that. I don't know about that choice.
Okay.
But everything that they kind of threw at us, I thought was really, really, really something else. And knowing the reactions that the test screenings have gotten, that this is supposed to be a just truly fantastic film, it seems like that's the direction it's headed. But gentlemen, what did you think of our Super Bowl look at The Flash?
I think when Idiot Barry becomes the big bad of this movie and tries to kill everybody, you're going to eat your words, is what I think. You put a flash in yellow, and you are putting a giant danger sign with neon over that flash. So that Barry showed up with his little yellow jacket and his little yellow headphones, and I was like, oh, yeah, okay. We can see where this goes. This trailer came out and did what it needed to do, which is it made all of us say, all right, Ezra Miller, we don't really like you, and we don't really know what you've been doing, but we hope you get your apology tour going because this movie looks great, and we all want to like it. As somebody on Twitter said, if you really want people to go see your Flash movie, put two Batman in the trailer. And that is exactly what they did. For me, what I really loved about this trailer is if you are a fan of the Flashpoint comic book, and if you're not a fan of the Flashpoint comic book, I highly recommend you go to Amazon right now and order the graphic novel and read it, because A, it is clearly based on this trailer a perfect primer for this movie, but B, it's just a great story all by itself. And you don't have to know anything else about what was going on previously in The Flash. It's a great standalone story, and it's clearly what they're doing. But what was awesome about this trailer was to see how they took what happens in the Flashpoint comic and sort of adapted it to their DC cinematic universe. And in this case, just based on the trailer, it looks like they were doing things the right way in the way that Marvel does. In the way that Civil War, the movie, is not Civil War, the comic, but it gets some of those key ideas in there and really nails them. That's what this trailer seemed to do in the way that they introduced Kara, which is similar to the way that Superman is treated in the Flashpoint comic, using Zod as this big existential threat that is now going to take over the universe in the absence of metahumans, in the same way that they use some of the characters in the Flashpoint comic. Like, it was easy to sort of see what they were setting up in this trailer, given what they did. There's also some things that I find confusing that I'm not quite sure, like, what about Barry going back in time and saving his mom, or going to a universe in this version where his mom is alive, leads to a different Bruce Wayne than the Bruce Wayne in his universe. Like, there's still some interesting things that I'm excited to see how they figure out, but it really looks like all story cylinders are firing on this one. Did I do the cylinder thing right that time? I did.
You got it. Good job.
Thank you.
I mean, how can I say? There are some... I lost my shit. I mean, I lost my shit because I just was blown away by what we got here, because I didn't anticipate that we get so much Batman. And I didn't anticipate that we would get Man of Steel stuff. Batman, sorry. Yes, Batman. Sorry. But I didn't anticipate that we would get so much Man of Steel stuff. And I liked some of the imagery here that was just mind-blowing from Andy Muschietti. Like, I'm looking through some of these pictures here to kind of remind me of this stuff, and I just was just massively blown away by it. I mean, seeing Michael Keaton back, we've had the feelings of him coming back, but I didn't anticipate. Here, I'm just going to share the screen because I really want to get you guys' thoughts on this. I was going to copy him, but the web piece, it drives me nuts. Who is this? A lot of people are speculating this might be Michelle Pfeiffer as Selina Kyle here at Bruce Wayne's house. If that's true, sweet Mary, mother of God, we've gone into the next section of my insane fandom to see her back as Catwoman. And then also look at this image here. I mean, this is as good as anything you're going to see that mirrors anything you saw in Man of Steel between Zod and Superman. So to have her be a part of this, what is her role going to be in this with Zod? So curious by that. Of course, that shot there. And then Kara bringing, I mean, Sasha Kaye, there was, you know, they're saying they're doing a new Supergirl movie. She's going to be a harder edge person. Everything I saw from her in the trailer makes me think she could be fantastic if they give her the chance to play it in this new universe. Everything she does here, the look, the appearance, the presentation, all of it. Then you get the blue and gray suit here, the Batman, and the last shot here of all those Bat costumes. I mean, there's like a comic book one. There's a year one one. You've got the underwater one. You got all kinds of different Bat costumes. It's going to be great. So
my detail in that, and I didn't realize this, but somebody else pointed it out, is in that lineup of costumes, there's the 1989 Batman costume that has burn damage on it from where the Batwing crashed before he fought the Joker.
Right. Okay. Yeah, maybe right there in the middle. Right there. Right there.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about. Yeah, of course. Where does he get those wonderful toys? But yeah, I mean, just from top to bottom, yeah, I mean, I didn't want to believe it. I didn't want to think they could. And when you watch that trailer, you can't help but walk away and go, God damn, this is going to be fantastic. And you're going to have to reconcile your feelings with about Ezra Miller and the stuff that they pulled and the stuff that they are in trouble for and how this is all going to go down. It's going to be very interesting. But overall, looks like, and I think this is really important, Andy, I don't want Andy Muschietti's accomplishment with this film to get overshadowed by Ezra Miller's stupidity. I don't. I think to take on a franchise, or take on a film like this, when 500 of the directors bailed on it, when so many other screenwriters bailed on it, when the possibility that another Flash was going to be taking over the role, maybe so much was in flux, and for Andy to come in off the heels of those It chapters 1 and 2. To come in and deliver what looks to be maybe, and what a lot of people rumor to believe, one of the greatest comic book movies ever made, possibly the greatest comic book movie ever made, speaks volumes to his.
Okay.
I'm just saying. That's what I'm here.
Get off your cosmic treadmill and let's just pump the brakes a little bit here. Let's wait till the movie comes out.
I'm declaring now. But no, I mean, just it's incredible to see that from a director. And of course, for me personally, from a Latino director, a South American director, to come in and be able to stabilize this and do it. And I think it's fascinating because what they teased us and told us all the way back when, they're right. They're mixing in all the universes, the Snyderverse, the main universe, the universe. So, and there's still rumors that they're shooting or doing reshoots for that finale of whatever the finale is going to be, the post-credits scene or whatever, to launch the James Gunn universe. So there's still more to come. And I don't know who Sasha Kaye is holding in her arms from that way far back shot. Is that Barry or a version of Barry? Or is that Kal-El who is dead at Zod's hands? Is that someone? There's so many questions. And so I'm just very, very excited. And
I think I don't know this for sure. I think it's Barry. Mm-hmm. I was gonna guess, and again, well, because Barry says in the trailer, a world without metahumans,
right?
And so, and the Kara stuff makes sense if you've read Flashpoint, like where you see her, some of the shots of her kind of makes sense of what would have happened to a Kryptonian who landed on Earth. But I don't know that this is And I've seen lots of people speculating. And by the way, I'm talking out of my ass and I've only read Flashpoint, so I don't know. But I kind of feel like this is a world where Kara landed and Kal-El didn't.
Yeah,
possibly. Is my guess.
Yeah. Or a timeline where he landed.
Or a timeline, or yeah.
And the other part of this is James Gunn shooting down the rumor a couple of days ago from Grace Randolph that one of the former Batmen were going to show up at the end of this and be the launching pad for Batman for the Brave and Bold. And the rumor had been Clooney, and James Gunn had to come on Twitter and shut it down, and then say that it wasn't true, and that they were going to cast a new Batman. So, you know, there were a lot of rumors that it was going to be a former Batman. You know, so
in this case with this movie, I am glad that they're doing reshoots. Like, it's interesting. Like,
right.
This movie, even before James Gunn came on board, even before we were getting this version of Chapter One of James Gunn, like, of this whole universe and Peter Safran's universe, people were saying this was a great movie, but it just makes really good sense, however you're going to end this thing, to sort of use something that is apparently so good to help explain how you're going to launch everything that you're about to launch. Yeah. It just makes sense. So,
yeah, we'll see. All right. Any final words on this, Shannon? You're muted.
Sorry about that. I had to cough and I forgot to take myself off mute.
No worries.
It has also produced some really, really funny memes, because that shot of the two berries looking at each other, someone cut together that with the Nemoidians from episode one saying, "The people of Hawaii, oh no, now there are two of them."
Oh no. Oh my God. Oh my God. That is terrible. Oh man. Terrible.
Oh my gosh. That gave me such a chuckle. But
yeah,
The Flash comes out June 16th. So the summer movie season is going to be pretty stacked. I mean, just what we've talked about today, two in May, two in June.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, that's, we're scratching the surface of what we're about to get.
Yep. I'm exhausted.
Certainly not short on summer movies.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Yeah. I'm exhausted from the last 7 days of screenings and covering this stuff. So, I can't imagine once this really starts ramping up. It's going to be a crazy 2023. And look, we have Mandalorian right around the corner. We have Picard tomorrow as we're recording this. So there is so much coming to tide us over until these movies start coming out rapid fire in the summer for sure. All right, well, there we go. That's our episode of the Geek Buddies. Thank you all so much for joining us. We appreciate it madly. Damn it, we went long again. Good God almighty.
Yeah, because Vogel was busy being hilarious. It tacked on an extra 17 minutes.
Just one more thing. All right. Anyway, Shannon, take it away. What are we going to say?
If you'd like to follow us on social media, on Twitter, it's @geek_buddies. On Instagram, @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung. On Instagram, @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to have access to the curated humor of Mr. Vogel, it is @MKToon. If you would like to follow Mr. Roca, it is @TheRocaSays.
Mikey?
Well, we hope you enjoyed this extra long episode of Geek Buddies. And if you did, don't forget to thank the little people. They don't have a lot going on, and they just got to take big swings at us folk. And you know what? Maybe they'll feel better if you thank them. So why don't you take a minute in the comments to, you know, thank the little people. But the other thing that you guys can do is hit the like button below, hit the subscribe button to Johnny's page, leave your comments below, not just for the little people, but for all of us. Let us know what you thought of all these trailers. What do you think of a live action How to Train Your Dragon? Let us know what you thought of everything we talked about today. If you're listening to us on a podcast, go ahead and leave us some comments and stars. It helps us go up in the rankings. And as always, the best thing that you guys can do is retweet this video, post it on your socials, send it to your friends, and tell them to hang out with your buddies, the Geek Buddies.
There you go. And of course, a big shout out to Carbon Health, who continues to power and sponsor us here on the Geek Buddies. Head on over to carbonhealth.com for any healthcare questions, concerns, or needs. 100 plus locations all over the country, 80 plus locations in California alone, or download the app to have a doc in your pocket. Remember what I said, they're really focusing on mental health stuff as well. So if you've got that going on for you, reach out to them and see if they've got some great services for you in person or virtually. All right, y'all take care of yourselves. Be well, and we'll talk to you next time with another brand new episode of the
Geek
Buddies!
Hey!